Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, you're about to enter the wild game domain. I'm Chad Pagano. I'm a former Army sniper, a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid lifelong hunter. And you're about to experience the wild game domain from the hunt to the hearth, airing live on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm joined by my co-host, the brilliant Jessie Riley. Hi, Jessie.
Hey, Chad. Thanks so much.
She really is brilliant.
Well, we were a good combination, I think. You know, it's like I get like a kid sometimes, you get like a kid, then we both like use our gray cells and we get like a little smart, you know. It's
yeah,
like,
but
we have fun.
Yeah, not that. All right, thank you for including me in that. I appreciate that, but you're brilliant and smart. I'm funny. I'm funnier than you, though.
Oh.
I am. I'm sorry. There's no doubt about that, but you're smarter. So
well,
I guess
you got the timing thing. I got the more like... Oh, really? That was funny? Okay.
Well, today's not funny. Today we're not going to do anything funny because we're talking about economics.
Oh, well,
I know.
That's not putting anybody to sleep, though. Economics.
No, tune in. Right. We'll try to make it interesting. And here's the thing. Jesse, I'm going to be honest with you because we're going to be honest with our listeners. Jesse texted me yesterday and was like, hey, what are we going to talk about on tomorrow's show? And I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, what are we going to talk about on tomorrow's show? And I was like, all right, let me sit down. And my daughter was yelling at me, and the dog was running around, and my wife was screaming about something. And I tried to focus, and I thought, what can we do? It's a little different. I mean, you know, it's a show about hunting and wild game and gathering and sustainable eating, if we want to call it that. And I thought, how can we get outside the box? And I thought, what is the show supposed to be about? Well, hunting in general. And you know, my perspective in the show is, or on the show is, I'm trying to sell it. I'm trying to justify my killing of wild animals or picking of mushrooms, right? This way of life. I'm trying to sell people who may not support my choices.
Okay.
I don't know why feel a need to do that, but I want to.
All
I want to be.
You can sell, and I think it's more like maybe that's me. The more you know. Part of this whole continuum, we're part of this like ecology.
Say she's smart. She's smart. I just want to sell fucking people.
You want?
Am I allowed to say that?
You want a justification to go shoot animals?
Right.
And I'm like, look, but it makes sense. There's a reason why we do this.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's why you're brilliant and I'm funny. And I thought, okay, what's another angle here? I bet we've been trying the health benefits of it, the sustainability of hunting, all these things.
Well, responsibility for your food sources.
Right. Taking ownership of it in a way. And then I thought, well, what about how do we contribute economically? And we've talked about that a little bit through, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and the Pittman Act that saved wildlife in this country. And, you know, but we've never really broken it down. Completely, and that's what I want to try to do today, kind of sell hunting economically, what it does for our state and the country in general. I mean, you know, really the local counties, towns, state, all the way up till to federal
agencies. I mean, like we kind of know just in like an anecdotal kind of way, oh yeah, hunting contributes, you know, it's a big economic boon to each state. But we were both kind of looking at different sources online. And a couple of years ago, the state legislature said that the New York State Department of Environment Conservation had to actually keep track of this. They do a lot of work right now where they do environmental impacts on invasive species and invasive animals. But to take a systematic view on what do hunters contribute in terms of the local economy and federal and state tax revenue. And it's really some really phenomenal
numbers. No, it was, and as I was doing my research, too, I was shocked by some of the numbers.
Yeah.
They're really, you know, really huge. But, you know, when we start this conversation, I was trying to put it historically, you know, I was trying to frame it historically in my mind, because, you know, we just pick up today, right? And there's a lot of money being thrown around in this, if you want to call it an industry, or there's a lot of money related to this sport or whatever we're doing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there were guys that came along before us, you know, that kind of paved the way. You know, and we look at, you know, I know people are going to laugh at me, but, and you know, I'm a big fan of these guys. Mm-hmm. Daniel Boone.
Okay.
Davy Crockett. Kit Carson. These were the frontiermen, you know, who brought hunting kind of to the mainstream America. They kind of said, hey, look at us. We're celebrity. They were the first celebrity hunters, these guys that came along. Prior to this, our system was based on the feudal system in Europe. Mm-hmm. You know, it was for royalty. You couldn't hunt the animals. They're not yours. They're the king's.
But I guess the difference here, right, I mean, we have the early stages of our country, right, you would have had people just trapping animals for local consumption because we didn't have a whole infrastructure when people arrived here.
Right. No, absolutely. And they did within reason. But, you know, when you look at the colonists, you know, proper British gentlemen who came here, they wouldn't do it. It was, mm-hmm. first of all, it was either beneath them mm-hmm. or if it wasn't beneath them, they weren't allowed to do it. It was above them. There was no in between. And guys like Davy Crockett said, you know what? I'm going to eat some venison today. I'm mm-hmm. going to get my muzzleloader. I'm going to get out there and I'm going to get one. You know, and then guys came along. You've heard the name Theodore Roosevelt. Yeah. I mean, I don't care what you say, has to be directly credited with saving the wildlife of this country, everything. Because we were ready, you know, and I know it's kind of it's weird because, you know, Davy Crockett and Daniel Boone contributed a lot to that. They went out and slaughtered more buffalo probably, you know, right. than anybody. But, you know, Theodore Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt's love of hunting basically led him to see, oh, my God, we got to protect these animals in some way. So he put, you know, safety measures in place to allow for a system to take place where taxes would be collected and
right.
distributed.
So like going present day, it's something like $25 billion in federal, state, and local tax revenue is generated by hunters.
Right.
Which goes directly back into state departments of environmental conservation.
Yeah. And my numbers were, and my research was a little higher than that. Mm-hmm. We're not going to argue a couple of billion dollars here or there. It's a lot of money. And what that money's based on is the tax put on everything hunted related. You go and buy a rifle. There's mm-hmm. an 11.8% tax, I think it is. Don't quote me on that. Something like that. An 11% tax added on top of everything that goes to the federal government that distributes to the local or, I guess, the state conservation departments mm-hmm. to fund their department for the conservation of animals, pay for these studies, to put the rangers out, you know,
right.
the officers, Department of Environmental Control offices out on the street to catch poachers.
Stock fisheries.
The fisheries. All of that. So that money can be directed no place else. They can't use it to save your Social Security. They can't use it to pay for Obama's stupid Obamacare.
Oh, I'm not going there.
Yeah, I went there. I don't care. That's my opinion. It's America. I'm a libertarian. But go Rand Paul. you know, this money, you know, goes directly to the wildlife, basically. And that's a great thing. You know, and it makes me feel... first of all, secure, comfortable in my hunting expeditions. When I go out and shoot a deer.
Well, it also allows the State Department to go out and do the kind of studies they need to do on, like, chronic wasting disease in deer.
Right.
Right, because otherwise they wouldn't have the ability to do that research.
No, absolutely. I mean, and that's, well, that brings up another interesting point because people are, you know, well, leave the poor little animals alone. Yeah, well, when we leave them alone, they overpopulate because guess what? You already built a house where they used to live, okay? And they're still going to populate, and they become overpopulated. They eat from the same food sources.
But that's like we're taking a sidetrack, but I want to go there, which is, you know, when people talk about deer being invasive, we invaded.
Right.
You know, we built a house on top of where they were living.
Right. Well, there's studies now, and true or not, I mean, we're in that ballpark now. They assume there's more deer today in North America than there were in the 16, 1700s. I mean, that's where we are. There are more deer. We're killing less of them, mm-hmm. right? And we're protecting them in a lot of places. You're not allowed to hunt them. Where, you know what, settlers out on Fire Island used to slaughter them mm-hmm. and eat them and use them for clothing, use their bones, use everything. Now, if you've seen, go out to Fire Island, all you animal activists, go out there and see how lovely the deer herds in Fire Island are doing. They're disgusting, diseased creatures that are suffering. Mm-hmm. They're basically stuck on this island. I know deer swim and they'll cross back. But there's nowhere to swim to, though. The other side's populated.
Yeah.
So they're on this island. They're in the small areas. They're spreading disease because they're so congested into their feeding areas, their bedding areas, mm-hmm. That disease just runs rampant. I saw one, I think I said this a couple of weeks ago, I saw one at Fire Island recently. The antler was growing down through its lower jaw. It already passed through its lower jaw. The deer's mouth was open as far as he could possibly open it because he was trying to avoid this antler coming into his mouth. And you could see where he'd been rubbing the antler, obviously trying to change the growth pattern of mm-hmm. it or, you know, try to do something to help himself. But the antler had grown straight down through the deer. Now, that deer is dead. Mm-hmm. There's no way that deer could survive. They're resilient animals. And this poor animal keep itself alive, nibbling through the side of its mouth on stuff mm-hmm. Until it dies an agonizing, you know, long-suffering death. So that's better for the animals than me putting a 30-yard six-round through its vitals and letting it drop in exactly 1 second, you know. But, okay, but that's not here, there. So just some numbers before we go on break here. We're going to go on break in a minute or two, but I want to throw these numbers out. Hopefully these shock you. They estimate there are approximately 14 million hunters in the United States of America. That's a big number. That's a huge number. And I'll remind everyone, they all have a firearm. You know, I'll remind everyone of that. Every one of them has some form of firearm. Right, 14 million.
Some numbers say up to like 34 million.
Right. Well, yeah. Because they don't count kids. They don't count other. Right. So mm-hmm. I guess the 14 million of these hardcore guys right. like me who hunt every single year, renew their license, and go out. You know, I know guys that hunt, you know, two or three times a year. They go out, walk around the mm-hmm. woods. They make believe they're hunters, and they feel good about it, and that's fine. I don't know if they count those guys. The 14 million hunters spent about $39 billion, and the last time they did the study was 2011. Mm-hmm. So that's probably higher by now, I mm-hmm. would imagine, even with the economic downturn. Let me tell you something. The economic downturn has hurt me. Hurt my family, mm-hmm. but it hasn't hurt my purchases. I just went out and bought a Redfield scope I needed, 3x9, had it mounted at the range.
Well, I think it's interesting because the economic downturn, I think, while it hurts people in other ways, and maybe you wouldn't spend as much on hunting gear or other things, hunting accoutrement, but I think the more venison you put in your freezer chest,
sure.
it's going to help your family in another way.
Yeah, well, all right. So I can't wait to get my wife in here. We've been talking about this for a while. Her, you know, she's the economist of my house. And
okay.
So she breaks down all the numbers, and she tells me how much I spend. She's like, you know how much this venison is that you're eating right now? And I'm like, no, I don't really care, and I don't want to know.
$30 a pound venison?
Right. It's something like that, you know, based on my boots, mm-hmm. my gas to go there, my food, mm-hmm. my rifle, my bullets, my scopes, everything else, my scent-proof clothing. So she reminds me of that all the time, but, all right. So wait, so $40 billion, how about 700,000 jobs created by mm-hmm. hunting? 700,000 jobs. So go ahead and cancel hunting. Why don't we just get rid of 700,000 jobs? That sounds good. Let's just eliminate those jobs from the United States. And then we already talked about the taxes generated, you know, by the hunters.
Well, some figures say that there's like a ripple effect of like non-direct, we say ripple effect, like, okay, so you're not going, let's say, to a hunting store, but let's say you're going to a big box store like, you know.
Right, Costco.
Costco, Home Depot, those things. That's like $192 billion in a ripple effect.
Yeah. And there's no way to measure that because they don't know it's direct. It's not directly hunted related. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you had said it before the show.
You buy a tarp.
You buy a tarp at Home Depot, right? To put your deer on, to drag the deer up, whatever. You know,
rope,
you,
whatever.
bungee cords to put up my little tarp at my my campsite when I'm out hunting. You know, the charcoal.
Yeah, it all adds up.
It all adds up, and it's all directly related. Never mind hotels, everything else. All right, perfect timing, Jess. We're getting good at this. Let's take a short break here. You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You're listening to Bang Bang Sun by Iggy Dean on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Chad Pagano, and I'm getting a camera stuffed right in my face. It's making me nervous. I'm here with Jesse Riley. What's up, Jesse?
Yeah, we're here to talk about the economics of hunting and its impact in the state.
Absolutely. How about some quick facts I found?
All right, well, we were just talking on the break how...
See, she's brilliant. She doesn't want to talk about quick facts. She's like, no, dumb people talk about quick facts. Let's have a discussion.
Well, we mentioned some numbers, and you're like, wait, these guys don't know their numbers. They're like, how could you be off by $15 billion? That's a big number, right?
Yeah.
So
I'll take half of it.
Yeah, so Chad's talking about the economic impact specifically of hunting, and I was looking at the impact of hunting and fishing as a combined activity.
Right. Yeah. Which makes more sense, and that's why I call you brilliant, because if we're doing a show about hunting, it's
a big number. It's like $76 billion.
Yeah.
Annually. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, just compound everything I said, because that's an amazing number.
Right, and then we were talking about, okay, so you've got some money from licensing and those kinds of things and direct hunting. But think about it. You go on a hunting trip, you've got groceries, you've got a motel. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got stuff your kid wants.
Beer.
At the store, beer. And you think it's not a big ticket Bourbon. Item each time, but all of that incrementally adds up.
Absolutely. No, it's never mind tolls, the wear and tear on your tires, on your truck.
Right.
You know, the little reflective things I put in the trees so I can find my tree stand when it's dark. The spikes I put, everything adds up. It's a huge industry.
Right, so you have like the amount that comes into the economy on a fairly regular basis on, let's say, during the hunting season, you know, weekly, monthly, and then you have when people make those big purchases, right? Like, didn't you just put down like a big chunk of money?
Oh, yeah.
For a piece of land?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and that guy that's my lease. You know, I had to pay off my lease. That guy is making money off the land he uses. I'm helping him with his land. I mean, it's a win-win. Very few situations, very few arrangements, or very few angles here are negative. You know, I know what you're going to say. Oh, people get killed. Yeah, I know one hunter dies every year when he falls out of his tree stand. I know that a stray bullet, and I don't mean to make light of it. You know, there have been stray bullets that take it, but knock it off. Knock it off. The good of this industry and the sport in general far outweighs any risks that come along with it.
Well, one of the things, right, we saw is that there are actually more hunters than there are people who go to NASCAR.
Yeah, that's great. I love that because I hate NASCAR. No offense to my NASCAR people. I'm a libertarian, man. God bless you. I tried to get into it. James at work. You know James?
Right.
Who's going to be a guest soon.
It's the driving in circles thing. I'm like,
yeah, he was like, let's do a fantasy league NASCAR. I'm like, all right, I'm in. Anything fantasy league, I do. I love it because, you know, fantasy football, the whole thing, fantasy baseball, it sucks. Oh my God. I get it. There's some strategy. You got to have a fast car and you got to like go in between other cars and draft. But all right, you know, I'm not going to.
We kind of do that commuting. I don't know.
Yeah, drive through Brooklyn. Try to get down Bushwick Avenue. That's NASCAR. Ridiculous. All right, wait. This was interesting. How much do you think? Let's do a game show.
Okay.
Jesse, how much do sportsmen contribute every day to support the wildlife agencies and conservation groups of this country?
Every day?
Every day.
Specifically the wildlife conservation agencies or just spend in general? Come on, Chad.
Well, it's worded. See, that's why she's brilliant. She can't even play a game. I don't know. Wildlife agencies and conservation in general.
Well, one number I have is about $208 million a day.
See, now that's high. That must include because mine isn't nearly as high.
That's right.
But that's about right.
Yeah.
That's shocking.
Right.
A day.
That's a lot.
Name another group of people that give that much money to help animals. PETA, where are you? Come on my show. I love you guys. I love you. Come on my show. Please. Tell me how much you guys give every day to help wildlife because that's what we're doing.
All right. Just because you mentioned PETA, I am going to say... All right, I can agree you don't want to club seals and wear a coat.
No.
But we're not talking about that.
Right.
Right? We're talking about wildlife conservation.
Yep.
We're talking about eating animals.
Right.
Taking responsibility for the food you eat.
Right.
Right. So.
Exactly. No, absolutely. Yeah. That's why I want them to come here and explain to me why I'm bad. Explain to me how I hurt animals. Explain that to me. Explain that. Like that, this, I saw this blurb, a little side thing. Then we're going to do another interesting fact.
Okay.
You ready? I saw this blurb in the newspaper, and it was actually a quote, like on the edge of the page, you know, from somebody who's writing in. They had done an online article about animal rights and PETA and everything, and the quote from this person who had called in was, "Why do you hunters have to go out and torture these animals when you could simply go to the supermarket and buy your food very easily? It's all right there.
If you think the animals in a factory farm have a nice life, then you need to go online and look at some interesting videos.
And did you see
videos.
The latest study? Not to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Pigs are smarter than dogs.
Oh, I knew that.
They proved it. And that scares me because I don't like pigs. I'm going to hunt pigs more often. They're going to try to take over. I said to go back to my show about wild boar. And now, keep laughing when I was like, boars are taking over. Watch out. It's going to be like Planet of the Boars. Not Planet of the Apes. Planet of the Boars. I said that, and I said, Como, that's why I need an AR rifle to protect myself from the wild boars.
From the wild hybrid
pig-boar
animal.
They're forming armor now. They are. Their skin is getting so thick.
Well, that was the thing, right? When the two animals get together, you have a smaller animal with a bad temperament and a larger animal with a better temperament.
Right.
And now you have a very large animal with a really bad temperament.
And now, and now I know they're smart.
Yeah.
So that really scares me. And I've hunted them, and they are smart. I thought it was instinct, though. But they figure it out pretty quick, these animals. So watch out for the boars. Okay. Here's another one. U.S. hunters outnumbered the populations of 46 states. Only Florida, New York, Texas, and California have more residents than the combined populations of U.S. hunters. How's that?
Do you want to know the states that they outnumber?
That's, I thought I, oh, the other four, I don't know, but you didn't name all.
I don't know, maybe Delaware, I don't know.
No, all, I mean, there's a lot, 46? That's amazing.
Yeah.
So here's what I propose.
Yeah. Okay.
All the hunters, give me a call, send me an email, something like that, we'll get our own state. We'll take over New York, right? We'll take over New York. Not, hey, NSA, get off my back. I meant peacefully. We will move here legally. We will establish legal residence, and we will vote.
So you want to overpopulate that northwestern part of New York, right?
Yeah, kind of like those free men up in New Hampshire, whatever those are, the libertarians up there, who I love. They have a website. Go to their website. It's crazy. They want everyone to move to New Hampshire, and that's what – but we could do it with hunters. We could hunt all day, all night. It would be like hunting utopia.
Yeah.
I would love it.
And bring back the barter system.
Thank you. Thank you. Except try to keep Starbucks open because my wife will be a nut and my daughter, they love Starbucks. They'll drive me insane if we don't have Starbucks. Just keep Starbucks open. I'll brew my own.
Yeah.
Fair trade. I mean, don't get me wrong. My wife doesn't go for that. She hates that shit. All right. What is another interesting fact here? Okay. If hunting were a company.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
If it were a company, the amount spent by sportsmen to support their hunting activities would place it number 73 on the Fortune 500 list.
That's right.
73. I don't know what the other 72 above it are, but they're big-ass companies. I mean, it would be huge. This is just, I'm saying this to show you the impact of hunters. I mean, because I feel like there's this kind of idea that where a bunch of beer-swilling animals that go out to the woods, yahoos, shooting our rifles.
Well, there's probably some sliver of that, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And you know what? The good hunters, the people who understand hunting and are doing it for the right reasons, we combat that every day. If I see that, it's at a minimum, it's someone I'm not associating with or helping. It's someone I wouldn't have in my club. It's certainly someone I wouldn't have on my property hunting with me and my family.
Well, like, because that's when accidents happen.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and guys, and that listen, you see this stuff on state land a lot, you know, place where it's open to the public. You see a lot of these yahoos. And listen, I'm not saying that everyone who goes on the side, I know plenty. I've hunted state land. There's plenty of guys, most of 99% of the guys that hunt state land are great hunters. They know the business. But it's those guys running around on these public lands that give everyone a bad name. It's dangerous. It's bad for the sport. You know, you took hunter safety, right? Then at least when I remember going to hunt safety, a big part of it was, you know, the public perception of the hunter. You have a responsibility as a hunter to make sure you're representing the sport of hunting. If people see you with blood all over your car and your hands as you're getting out to buy beer at the local Walmart after your hunting trip, that reflects on all hunters. Look at these jackasses, you know. And
let's start humming the tune from Deliverance,
right? Yeah, and that's what people think, and it couldn't be further from the truth. Look back at some of my past guests. Look at you. You're a hunter, Jess, and you're brilliant.
Yeah, and I'm hopefully not going to have too much blood on my hands when I go to buy beer.
Yeah, no, wipe it off.
First. Definitely.
Wipe it off. All right. So, I hope we made a point today.
Well, yeah. I hope we did, because to me it's part of a continuum, right? You don't do an activity in isolation, right? You go out to hunt, you're providing food for your family, and you're contributing to the economy of the country and to the State Department of Environmental Conservation.
Right, and you know me, I mean, from my ramblings, if you've been listening to the show, you know how I feel about government. You know how I feel. But I would never say a bad word about the New York State Department of Environmental Control. For the most part, I rarely disagree with them. I gotta get more involved in this crossbow thing that's happening
maybe,
now.
Maybe we can get somebody from there to talk to us.
I would love that.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I would love that, to have a guy in. Did you have a officer come into your hunter safety? They sometimes do that.
No, I'm doing it in September.
Oh, you haven't done it. Yeah. Right, I'm sorry. A lot of times.
I think our guest last week.
Right. A lot of times they have an enforcement guy come in and talk to you about the rules and, you know, what's expected and, you know, how any interactions with them out in the field would go. And for the most part, I mean, truthfully, I've rarely seen them. Mm-hmm. I had one run-in a couple of years ago where it wasn't even a Department of Environmental Control person. I had parked my car on someone's property inadvertently, hunting property I had permission to hunt.
Right.
And so they had called the police and said, someone parked their car on my property. And I was out hunting, and apparently the local police force showed up and was yelling for me, and I was way out in the woods. I didn't hear anything. When I came back, it was like, you know, FBI raid. They had my car surrounded. They were flashing sirens everywhere. I was like, are you kidding me? And, you know, the one guy there that kind of made sense to me was the DEC officer. He was like, where were you hunting? And I said, 800 yards out this way over to the right. You know, he's like, yeah, that ridge line? I said, yeah. He's like, that's not her property. I said, absolutely, it's not. I didn't know. Give me a parking ticket, whatever. It's not trespassing. No, I wasn't. I left the car. I'm sorry. So, you know, I have nothing but good things to say about those guys. Who, you know, most of the time you read about it, they're doing what I want them to do, and they're enforcing the laws. They're bagging poachers. They make sure guys are doing the right thing and representing the sport in a legal manner, and that's all we could ask. All right.
Okay.
Do you believe it? It's over?
I know. Another half an hour just frittered away.
Yeah. So that's all the time we have. I'd like to thank Joe for producing and engineering today's show. I'd like to thank Jesse, of course, for being brilliant.
Thanks,
and you
Jack.
Could always find archived episodes of The Wild Game Domain from the hunt to the hearth on heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.